Welcome to Nerdy For, the podcast where we ask people what they're nerdy for. On this episode, we are speaking with Yoshi. So he is a huge comedy nerd, and we just go into all the details of joke writing, building a set, analyzing famous people's sets, and it is all comedy. If you're a comedy nerd, this is the episode for you to listen to. Hi, welcome to Nerdy For, the podcast where we find out what folks are nerdy for. I am already giggling because I'm here with Yoshi. My good, oh, your mouth is amazing. My good friend, we do comedy together. We are also known as being the most giggly monsters in all of Giggle Land. Oh my gosh. Okay,
yes,
Yoshi.
We are very giggly.
So, yeah. Another so, because that's your last name. What are you nerdy for?
I am nerdy for comedy. I have recently went like full time after about 8 years. After 7.5 years of comedy, I'm going full time. And so I'm very in tune and very like nerdy around everything related to comedy. So producing, stand up, the actual art of it, laughs per minute. Like when I watch specials, I take notes of how many laughs people are getting. I check how many laughs they get per minute. I check how many laughs they average throughout whatever that hour, 45 or 35 minute special is. I check which laughs are big, which laughs are small. I check how they got the laugh. I check if they did a callback. I get very detailed about it.
Yeah, for you listeners out there, if you also want to just take all of the mystery out of comedy and make it a scientific study, you can get into stand-up.
It looks like you're conjugating a sentence instead of watching comedy. You must be a joy to watch these specials with. Your wife must love watching comedy with
Which is great because she does not watch comedy with me.
Oh, there you go.
So, like, it is, I am
you watching
able
it on slow-mo?
I am able to actually watch comedy as a fan and then watch comedy as a nerd. So when I watch comedy as a nerd, I get into like the specifics around how did that person get a laugh.
I have a crazy question for you. I have something that's on my phone at all times in case I am flying and I don't have access to entertainment. And since I can't read, I have to watch or listen to something. And I have on there right now, and it changes. For a long time, it was Maria Bamford's special on Prime, and now it's Nate Bargatze's special, also on Prime. And that's the one I just keep on there. And if I am on a plane and I have nothing else to do, I will analyze the F out of that. Do you have anything like that where you're like, you keep going back to it and trying to like separate it out?
So there are some specials that I will watch that I have that I think are like master classes.
Ooh,
like,
what are your master classes? Let me write them down.
A couple of master classes. Earthquake's last special that Dave Chappelle produced. Masterclass in the art of killing a small room in about 35 minutes. That special is about 36 minutes long. And that dude is averaging somewhere close to like 11 laughs a minute.
Where do you watch that?
I just watched it at home.
And then I'm not asking like what part of the earth. Jesus Christmas. Where do you, is it on Amazon?
It's on Netflix.
It's on Netflix.
Yes, it's on Netflix. So that special is really good. Ali Wong's Baby Cobra special. That's the first one.
The first one, yes.
Is a masterclass in just great writing. And Ali Wong, so here's another.
Great. I love Ali Wong so
much. Oh my gosh, she's so good. But here's another great thing about Ali Wong. She actually does not use a lot of words throughout her entire special. So real nerdy. Ali Wong specials average about anywhere between 7,000 to 7,500 words for their entire special. And somebody like Earthquake says a whole lot more. So most specials, like, but she's just slower. Yeah, yeah. So every special.
I'm so excited. Yeah. How do you count the words in a special? Do you type it up? Do you have your, like, the computer talk to AI and it types it up?
In the Googles.
In the Googles?
The Googles,
on the online?
In the Googles, on the online internets that.
Where all the porn is? I'm not allowed on there.
We just got to stop looking at porn long enough to look up anything else.
I'm Quaker.
Where Al Gore discovered it, when you go to that thing that Al Gore
what
discovered.
What was he looking for on there?
I don't know if this was what he was looking for, but this is what I use it for. You can just type in script for Netflix specials, and it just shows you every single word.
How they put it in the Congress, the library
So it's the same. It's the same way as like you're looking for like the screen script for
three titted ladies. No, I'm sorry. I didn't know which. I didn't know your search.
Yeah.
BBW?
I need to look for three-titted ladies.
It's just going
to
link you to the Arnold
Total Recall fan.
Yeah. There we go. I was literally just about to say. And I will say, it's not the, they didn't do that in the remake.
They sure didn't.
And I didn't watch it because I did find, I was like, hey, did they? And they're like, no. And
we're,
I was like,
only
why
here for the three-titted lady. It was burned on my psyche as a child.
Why would I? That was like the first movie I actually saw at a movie theater. And I was a young boy. And I was like, how is that possible? Yeah.
You're like, so I'm going. I was like, up into space, like, y'all.
All you girls in this elementary school are not doing it for me. I'm going to need somebody
need some
with
radiation,
three.
Bitches. I'm going to Chernobyl. Where did you go? Wait, where did you go to middle school?
I went to middle school in Richmond, Virginia. I went to high school in Texas.
Okay.
And I went to elementary school in Philadelphia.
You traveled around.
Yeah, I did travel around. Yeah, I'm an international superstar, like Pitbull, baby. But no, I traveled a lot because my father was a professor. And
don't hit the table. It goes into the mic. Sorry, jazz hands.
My bad. My father was a professor, so I was very much like a... He's a super nerd who read a lot. So that's kind of... probably where I get a little bit of like the detailedness from.
Yeah, the academia approach to
comedy. Yeah, the academia approach. And so when I am looking at like a comedy special, or like I'm thinking about like doing another special, I recorded one, but I never put it out. And I'm just looking at how often I want to get laughs based on like how long I want to go for. So in a 45 minute set or like a headline set, I'm trying to average about 10 laughs a minute. Which means the jokes that I'm putting in have to be at a pretty solid, consistent rate.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So even like in a shorter set, I'm actually trying to average even more.
Well, because you're showcasing.
Because I'm showcasing. So like, I actually believe like three is what you should start with if you're starting comedy in a minute. But like five is what you want to get to if you're like average. And then if you want a headline, I think 8 to 10 is like solid. Mm-hmm. And then there's some people who just don't get that many laughs because they're a little bit slower. Like Ali Wong actually only averages like 5 to 7 laughs
she's
per minute.
She's a storyteller. So she's
a storyteller.
Yeah.
But her laughs are so big.
Mm-hmm.
They're so good. But like somebody like Taylor Tomlinson gets about...
she's so
10
tight.
To
dense.
15 laughs.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
She is a tag master. Like she gets so many tags after jokes. It's so good. And then somebody like Sam Morril, who's I think just a god when it comes to like conciseness, him and Mark Norman, they are getting so many laughs throughout it and they're just squeezing the hell out of jokes. Mm-hmm. They don't use any fluff.
It's all set up punchline. I mean, and then I wonder, like, I leave like, me a little bit like, well, tell me more about your personality. Move across the stage. And give me a little bit more.
Yeah.
But I think people are going for that shotgun experience. Like,
yes.
Brum, brum,
and I think part of it is that, like, I feel like the internet's kind of spoiled us to where we are just like looking at things and just like, all right, I need to be entertained as quickly as possible or else I'm going to move on.
Yeah.
And I think comedy has sort of fed that. And, you know, that's why the crowd work stuff is, I think, working. Because people are like, all right, let me see something kind of controversial really quickly and see how awkward it is. Because that's the most entertaining. And then they move on.
Yeah. I think it is good, though, that you noted, like, it just kind of depends on your style. Because it really is. Like, it's a big, and just for anyone listening, I don't do stand-up anymore, but I used to. And I did a lot, like, of open mics. So it was just, like, dealing with a lot of more green people.
Yeah.
And I was, like, people were like, oh, I'm not doing, like, this, or this person's doing better than me. I'm like, well, what's your style? Like, and like you said, like, are you a storyteller? Are you just like joke? Do you do a lot of that? And especially, and like you were saying, like once you get up to like specials and headlining, then you got to have like a good flow of it because like you have to hold up energy for
you have to hold
30
up
30 minutes to 60 minutes.
Yeah.
A lot of
I feel
work
like
to do.
Taylor does a great job telling very personal stories and keeping the LPMs up because of her way of writing.
Absolutely. I mean, but I think to what Joel mentioned, there's just a lot of good ways to do comedy. There's not like just one way to do it.
Oh no, it's so good because
there's so many different people. But also like that's why, I mean, I think like Nate Bargatze's last special, not the one that he did on Amazon, the one before that, I thought was like, oh my God, you are literally telling about my life. That's what I felt. I was like, this thing is so good. Because he was talking about being a latchkey kid, talking about being married, talking about having
relatable.
Like his first kid. It was all relatable stuff.
Yeah.
And all of it was just like, oh my God, this hits home so, so hard. And I love that special. But yet people are like, oh, it wasn't the greatest. Mm. And then I wasn't like, I like this last special, but I thought it wasn't as good as the other one, the one on Netflix. Mm-hmm. But I do like it because he is also like Ali Wong. He doesn't use a lot of words. Very, very slow. Nate Bargatze talks like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Right, that's part of his character.
It's part of his character, but it also, when he gets the laughs, it's real big.
It's a big laugh.
It's a big laugh.
A laugh of knowing, because we know his character now. Yeah. His audience is like, oh, you're the dumb guy.
That's what I'm saying. I love, one of my favorite styles is dumb smart, where like everything you're saying sounds dumb, but then you're like, no, that person is so fucking smart because they understand how to make this really complex subject.
Complex.
And he's like, cool. It's just like reducing fractions. You boil it down, you boil it down. And it's like, hey, this like crazy intense premise. And then here's the dumbest way I can present it.
Dumbest
and it just hits you.
Dumbest.
Because it's like one of those, like, you get the first laugh and then you think about it for like next 30 seconds. You're like, oh my God, yes.
My favorite joke from Nate Bargatze's recent thing is when he has a boy come over, a boy child come over to the house in exchange for someone taking care of his girl child. And he's like, you put a bobcat loose in my house. It's under the deck, chewing on wires.
It's so funny.
That was so esoteric. Yes. It's esoteric. Under the deck, chewing on wires, a bobcat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know he went through a cheetah. He went a monkey, an elephant. Like all the different things you could put the animal. And then where is the kid? He's in the attic chewing on the insulation, all the different things. Where is he? What's he chewing on? He's chewing on my daughter. He's chewing on my wife's hair. He's chewing on the snacks. And then he got to under the deck chewing on wires. And I think that's what raccoons do. Like that's something a feral animal does.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I felt a tickle. Yeah. I felt the energy. I'm like, that was the perfect punchline.
And I think that's like the beauty in watching comedy specials is like watching someone work out a set. I remember one of the people I was always obsessed with, especially in the Atlanta scene, was Mia Jackson. Mm-hmm. And if you guys don't know Mia Jackson, she's absolutely hilarious. But I remember watching her when I was starting comedy, and I'd see her work out a joke at different places.
Yes.
And she just work parts of the joke at different places. I saw her do this biscuit bit like maybe 15 times. And then when it was like tight, I was blown away by how tight it got from where it started. Because I thought it was hilarious the first time. Mm-hmm. And then I was on a show with her, like at Dad's Garage or something like that. And I was like, oh my God, this is a great joke. And then like the next time I was like, this is a better joke than the last joke. And like, you just see it getting better and better and better and better. And then when it got to like super tight and then I saw it in her special, it was like,
she's so good.
Bing.
It was like, wow.
I've heard a guy.
A dude. Someone with the penis.
Hair. I'll get it. But he said a real joke.
Yes.
Is a polished stone. Like you've been working on it and polishing it for 2 years. And now here it is. It's a perfect gift.
Yes.
You're welcome.
Yeah. I mean, I remember even like jokes that I've started out with that I've refined because we did the World Series, and when I started doing the World Series, I was
of
like,
comedy,
oh,
not
of comedy.
Baseball.
Yeah. Like when I started doing the World Series,
y'all did World Series. You got struck out. Then you're like, I guess I'll try comedy now.
No, I know. I'm not really good at catching things.
Amy actually blew out her knee. She was about to go with the
Yankees.
Yeah,
in the locker room.
Yeah. Oh,
clean
family,
show.
Family friendly show. How do babies get made? That's what we're talking about.
You put them in the butt. Am I doing it wrong?
Yeah. She's like, we're trying, but I don't really know if it's working.
Yeah, the seventh inning stretch has a new name.
And that's a polished rock there, y'all.
Yeah, sliding into home.
We just that's a rock you find in the river where the river polished it. We just picked it up and presented it to you.
Yes, my husband's very good with an organ.
Dun, dun, dun,
we're
dun,
old school.
Dun,
we have a wood dun, bat. Dun. I can do this all. Two balls, one dun, strike. Dun, dun,
dun. It's the World Series of comedy.
A catcher's mitt. Sorry.
You just gotta beat it up to get it really ready.
It needs a lot of oil.
Yeah.
Or something on your
hands. Then you can pass it down to your kids.
Nice oily catcher's mitt. That is an heirloom. Oh my God, that got dirty fast.
Dirty real fast.
I like how you said fast. That started dirty and then just got ridiculous.
Well, I didn't notice at the dirty. Beginning. Yeah. I wasn't paying attention.
That is like the beauty of jokes, right? Is like they start at a certain place and then they get to other places. And I enjoy, like, especially when I'm out doing like open mics or even just on a showcase, where somebody will give me like a tag. I remember Joe Smith gave me a tag for a joke that just as soon as I got it, I was like, oh my God, I had no idea that this would work. And literally, it's like one of my biggest jokes. Yeah. And it just worked. And it was just like quick little tag right after something that I thought was like already polished, right? Mm-hmm. And so I enjoy even doing that for people because I'll hear stuff. I'm like, ooh. You know what, you could make this
but
really
pop. I think
we
should share tags and people can throw them in the garbage or whatever.
Absolutely. Yeah,
but if you care about someone, you're like, your fly's open and or here's a tag.
Here's a tag.
It's definitely it's part of like community building, but also it's one of those things of like, you know, outside looking in, you've been like, oh, I'm just doing this joke and I'm slowly piece by piece and like, oh, this is the thing to like to end it on.
Absolutely.
And also, I think what a lot of people don't realize from any creative field, not just stand up, I'm talking about people that watch like comics. You like watch a special, that's what we're talking about, and you're like, oh my God, all this stuff is so good. It's like boom, 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 boom. It's like, that took 5 years. Like that's
not that
they got up and like, I'm just gonna do an hour. And it's like, no, that is work.
I heard Tom Segura runs his special 100 times before he.
Oh yeah. I believe it.
I just try to get stage time. Oh, how do you run your special 100 times if you're just doing 8 minutes?
Very few people can run their specials 100 times, right? But I mean, he's at that level. Yeah. Adam Muller, who just put out a special about last year, he's a good friend of mine from New York. He's a New York comedian. I think he ran a special maybe 65 times before did it.
All around
I think 65 in terms, I think that was the number that he mentioned because we were on the podcast with him a couple weeks ago. And I was like, oh my God, I should go through that 65 times. I was just super jealous. I was like, oh my God.
Do it.
Like, what kind of stage time? Where are you getting that kind of thing?
But I love doing an hour, awesome. Two times in one night. I've never been happier. Every time I get to do that, I feel like I learn, I get some more tags.
Oh my God, yes.
I figure out what's not related to
everybody. Because an hour is like, that's a workout.
Oh, I love it.
That is a workout.
Oh, you sweat through your dress, but for sure. Like, I don't know if you're wearing dresses when you are on stage. Yeah. But it's worth it. It's so good.
Yeah. And I've watched people like do hours and it's like there's a rhythm to doing an hour. And I know people who've done hours and they'll slow down like right around that check drop time. And I'm like, why'd you do that? But I realize it's because at a club, no one's paying attention when the check drops. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ali Sadiq does this thing where he literally shifts into one-liners. He's a storyteller, like one of the best storytellers of all time. He's got this special out called Domino Effect, which is amazing. But at check drop, he switches to one-liners for 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as the checks are all picked up, goes right back into like
the stories.
His closing set.
Yeah, then he has a closing
bit, and then he has a closing bit. I was like, oh my. I saw that. I was like, absolutely magical. Mind you, Ali Sadiq, I'm going to give him some more props. Also, when he does weekends, 6 different sets.
Now, this is what I'm talking about. I've heard of 2. Chad Daniels just recorded 2 different specials the same night. One was the first show, one was the second show.
That's insane.
I love that energy because you never get bored of the jokes.
Oh my God.
You have all these different stories
I saw him 3 times during that weekend. This was a weekend at the Punchline. And I think literally he used 5 minutes of the same material throughout the whole weekend.
Was it only five minutes?
That is crazy.
No, it was just like this. Actually, it was his check drop set. Was all the same.
Because it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That was all the same. And it was just like these silly little one-liners that he had. And those were the only things that were the same.
Now that's amazing.
And everything else, new stuff the entire time.
That person was on stage a lot. And I love that idea.
I mean, it wasn't like B material. He was killing them with the hits.
Setups have the jokes.
I mean, it was amazing to watch. Yeah. And that's how nerdy I get about. So I like going to the punchline.
What's his special I can watch?
Domino Effect.
Okay.
It is so
I gotta check that out. I haven't heard of him at all, but I gotta check
I
him
believe
out.
He is the best storytelling comedian.
Where can I watch this? On the sofa on or Netflix. In the airplane?
Sorry, okay. On not Netflix, on YouTube.
Naked in bed. That was the answer, and you answered it wrong.
On YouTube.
I do know for a lot of traveling comics, because I used to run like a showcase up in Chattanooga. It was really small. I got a lot of like bigger names because I'm like, I can't really give that much. I can give like $200 on a Tuesday. They're like, I don't give a shit. Can I do an hour?
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, do you want to do an hour? They're like, yeah. I just need to work it out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that is well, especially like,
you know, want the time.
Bigger people, you can get that. But like, you know, newer upcoming comics, always go to, if you see like, and you got like a little hometown comic scene and you see a big name coming into like a small bar, go there because they're just workshopping an album. Like you're going to see what they're going to be putting out in like 6 to 12 months.
I saw, oh my God, what's the name? I forget his name.
John Mulaney.
Pale white dude.
Well, you got to be very more specific.
Jim Gaffigan.
Yep.
Wow.
We spent a lot of time together in Las Vegas.
I was just like, pale white dude is just like, cool. So we've narrowed it down to 70% of white comics.
Yoshi walked into my home tonight and I looked at him. I'm like, you're hungry, aren't you?
Yes. You can just tell. And you were like, I am hungry. I'm so hungry.
So we fed you.
I had a busy day and I was picking up my kids and all this kinds of stuff. And I was hungry. So I saw Jim Gaffigan. I was in New York for work one time and he went up. I was supposed to go up that night and I just got like a guest spot. He went up and did 35 minutes on horseshoes.
Christmas.
And when I tell you, it's probably good. I've never been fascinated by horseshoes ever. he crushed with 35 minutes on horseshoes, and then the horseshoes special made it into the special.
Into this horse, the horse bit that's so long in the special. Calls it out. He's like, yes, I'm still talking about horses. Yeah,
it's hilarious. And I'm like, oh my, I mean, and that was like the magic of watching somebody work something out and then realize, oh my God, like they have to work all the stuff out to get to that final version.
I was like, when I was breaking down Jim Gaffigan and why he's funny, because I am jealous of any clean comic because I have a problem. But so he has a voice and then he has his voices he does. So he'll do a setup and then he'll do the punchline in all these voices. And I'm like, well, I don't do voices. So I guess I have to be dirty.
Did you just say you don't do voices?
I guess I do voices.
You just got to get more comfortable with yourself.
Who, me?
I think, you just.
But I heard when he first started out, because I think he started out with Bill Burr and everybody. Mm-hmm. Like, he started out with that gang. And he, I guess, when he was doing, like, the person in the audience voice, which was on his first album, it was most of his first album. I guess like for a long time, audiences were like, oh, he's having a psychotic break. Like he was bombing hardcore. And they were like,
that's how you know it's good.
He's not going to make it.
That's how you know
like
it's good.
His friends were like, uh-oh, this
I
guy.
I love watching people that you don't think are going to make it.
Yeah, they're like, I hope someone gives this man some opportunities. Mm-hmm. No one's going to know the name Jim Gaffigan in 5 years.
I was so manic when I started on stage. I'm like, there's a lot of yelling inside my head, so I'm going to yell on stage. And it was too much.
It also takes a long time to like find your rhythm and your voice like on stage. I remember I did it for like 3 or 4 years and then I did like a week and a half long tour. Mm-hmm. And I came back and people were like, how was the tour? And I was like, I think I hate all my jokes.
Yeah.
Ooh, well, Jen. Yeah. Oh gosh. Who's Jen from Asheville area? And she's a headliner. She's a lesbian.
Kirkman?
No. She just headlined in Charleston.
I just saw her name.
Yeah. This is fun. We're both old together. We're going to get it. She told me, I was asking her, how do you make it work? How do you do this? And she said, you just keep doing it until you're sick of all your jokes. I'm like, got it.
Yeah.
That's honestly true. It's so true.
Yeah, yeah. Very true. I believe it. I mean, and here's the thing. Like, I also think there's never a reason to retire your jokes. They came from your head.
Jen Snyder.
There's some reason that you said it. It's just a matter that like maybe you're just not ready to tell it yet. I remember writing jokes when I was early on that were like super controversial or like a little bit like naughty. And then I'd try them and they were terrible and they bombed. And then like years later, I tried them again when I was better at comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And they worked.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay.
Damon Sumner told me, never throw a joke away, put it on a shelf.
Yeah.
And I'm like, where do you have a shelf? Is that the cloud? Oh, God. Where do you write them all down? How do you remember
them? You write your jokes?
I can't even remember Jen Snyder's name, and I think she's one of the best comedians I've ever seen. So
where do you write your jokes? Like, how do you keep notes of all your jokes?
Okay.
I'm nerdy about that. Like, how...
You ready for
We're seeing real time.
Yeah.
This is my receipt. So, I have paper. I have writing it down on cardstock in my purse or in the back of old. Yeah. I keep all my jokes like on one piece of paper like this. And then I print this out and I take it to all my sets. On the back, I try to write new jokes. And then I put those, I write them up into the joke library, which is nicknamed New York Style. Because I'm trying to be less wordy and more joke driven, like more punchlines.
Yeah.
And then I print it out. And then I take this on the airplane because then I can write on this on the airplane and make notes. This is an old one. I'm keeping just in case everything burns down everywhere and I need to have an old copy.
That's perfect.
Yeah. So I do lots of paper, but then most of it is organized in my phone. So
that means you know how to Google shit. I can't remember what to Google.
Mostly because I'm one of those people that doesn't delete anything. So I'm kind of like a digital hoarder. Mm-hmm. So I can find all the old jokes.
But you have to know what to search for.
But I know what to search for.
I didn't know how to search in a document until last year.
Mine is all on Evernote.
Joel's laughing.
I'm not laughing at the ineptitude. I'm laughing that you have like three of the biggest tech nerds ever in this house.
They taught me.
Yeah. And then they're just like, Mom, please. Yeah. Do you see the thing that looks like an hourglass? You're like, what?
It's a game changer.
I thought that was a circle with a line.
That's so funny.
It's a new day since I learned how to search in a Google Doc.
Yeah. So mine are organized. I organize it by year.
Okay.
And what I do is every year I write new setup, new punchline. So it's like 2023, new setup, new punchlines. And then I write everything that comes to my mind for that year, no matter what it is. And then I date that joke.
Okay.
And then
very chronological.
Chronologically. So when I think of it, so like I'll pull one up real quick of just like, just so as of, I think the last thing I wrote was a couple days ago. It was about
pornographic porcupines. I like alliteration.
Oh yeah, it's about how I have the same chance of like predicting sex with my wife as like people who believe in astrological signs. Like,
well, she's a Capricorn.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like,
that means tonight she's growing horns.
I was like, pretty much, it's not going to happen.
She's
whether
ram me.
Whether Mercury's in retrograde, Mars, Venus, and Jupiter are in like some threesome type of thing. Like,
my husband
I have no idea, right?
Do you chart her cycle?
What'd you say? Do I chart her cycle?
Yeah.
I do not chart her cycle.
Oh, that's a game changer.
Oh, that's a game changer? Okay.
Yeah. My husband's like, you're going to be horny in 45 minutes. And he's not wrong.
That's pretty solid. I need to figure that out. But yeah, so I chart basically, not chart. Now I'm thinking about charting my wife's.
And you're honey, what were your last three cycles? Okay, good.
So I write everything by the date, put it all down. And then if something's... And then this is where I work my open mic sets. And then when I goes to final version, I have a final version
of those jokes.
Of those jokes. But this is all the ideas. And then the final version makes it into the final set. And then when I organize my 45 or my 35 or my 20, I go to the final version and I say, okay, here's the thing that I'm going to do for this set. So I have clean stuff. And like my material is probably 85% clean. But that's about 55 minutes of material. And I'm very conscious of how many minutes I actually have, because I can probably do 5 to 10 minutes of crowd work that can sort of fluff the time. But I'm very conscious. I've got literally 45 minutes of clean material and about 58 minutes of not clean material.
That's a lot.
And like, I just know what I have, and I don't try to like book
expand
anything.
If
someone asked me like, do you have an hour of clean, I was like, I do not have an hour.
I can vamp for a little bit of it.
Like, I was like, I just don't, because at this stage I don't want to try to even go into it.
So okay, this is a question I have. And then I want to tell you how I organize mine. But like, there's a part of me that really wants to be like a Jim Gaffigan and Nate Bargatze and make something that everyone can laugh at. And then there's my brain, which only laughs at dirty stuff.
Yeah.
So, and that's what's real to me. And that's what me and my friends laugh at. And so, like, I do work, like, my goal is always writing clean material.
For
and
sure.
I do that. And then slowly over time, as I'm performing this material and I'm on stage in a loose environment and I start ad-libbing, it turns dirty.
For sure. So I say, like, just I would say as a comedian, you have to kind of know how to do a little bit of both.
Like, to get booked.
To get booked.
Yeah.
But I also say sometimes you just have to make fun and have jokes about very mundane things. Mm-hmm. And the reason I realized this when I started doing more corporate gigs, like, I'll have a joke about Spirit Airlines that I wrote like years ago, but it works.
Yeah.
But it's because everyone can relate to that. Not that you need to write.
And you can laugh at it at work.
You can laugh at it at work and no one's going to like crush you for it. There's no dirtiness to it. Everyone sort of relates to it. I've got jokes about traffic. I've got jokes about family dynamics. I've got jokes about grandparents, of just things that I know that everyone laughs at. So sports, family.
Yeah.
And there's just certain topics that everyone will laugh at. And so I think it's important to at least have something if you want to do like clean corporate-y stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't think you have to do clean corporate-y stuff to be successful at comedy.
Caitlin Palufo came on the podcast and she told me for her, it was important for her to be honest.
Yeah.
To find the people out there in the world
who
jive with her material.
Yeah,
but at the same time, you've got to support a family. So you porn yourself out, young man. You bend over that corporate barrel and you take it.
I mean,
it.
But here's the thing. Like, I like doing corporate stuff. I don't mind doing corporate stuff. Now, do I prefer that my material? Not necessarily. Mainly because, like, I just want to perform in front of as many people as possible. And I also can tell in a crowd, like, since I've been producing, I can tell if someone's like, oh, we want dirty material.
Yeah.
And then I see the crowd. I'm like, no, you don't. You absolutely do not want
dirty
material.
Learning how to read your crowd is really a big part of
it,
too.
Oh, my God. It's so huge. And what you realize is that the people who wanted dirty material is probably just one person, but they don't know their room. And
yeah.
they just think that, oh, yeah, I like dirty comedy.
Everyone should like it.
Everyone should like
that's
it.
That's the most interesting thing about comedy. It's so personal, and people think what they think is funny, everyone should think it's funny.
Subjective.
And
that's
absolutely.
Like, that's
and
totally
so,
not
but
what,
I, what I've recognized, though, is like if you do clean up top and you can actually get a pass to do dirty, and it's actually
cool.
And people are just like, oh, you're hilarious.
Yeah, you're easing into it.
You're easing into it.
That's why I like a longer set. Oh, wait, are we talking about comedy?
No.
No, that's
we
what
are
it,
not.
It was like I was saying before, though, like finding your voice and like the person that said, like, you just go till you hate your joke. It really is true, though, because it's about like finding your comfort level on stage, finding what the flow is and stuff like that. And then also you're saying, like, do you want to do personal jokes? Do you want to do that? But I really do think it's just the biggest thing of it's not just like, it is good to be like, oh, I like these comics. These are the people I want to kind of emulate and like go off of. But I do think like, how are you going to be the best version of your stage persona and have the best flow of your jokes?
Absolutely.
Is it shock? Is it like machine gun jokes? Is it
for
like long storytelling?
Yeah. And I think as when you start comedy and when you're continuing comedy, you're also finding yourself and finding like what kind of stuff that you do that you actually resonate with. I've figured out like not that it's like 100% that people in the suburbs, HOAs, suburban moms, people with money resonate with my material. I destroy at country clubs.
Mm-hmm.
I do really well at country clubs. Yeah. Anything with the HOA, I destroy at.
Yeah. You have a warm energy too.
Yeah.
You are a lovely, joyful person.
I appreciate
and you attract
that.
Light.
Yeah. So I think what it is I have found my audience. And I remember Vanessa Fraction, who's a comedian here in Atlanta, told me, long time ago, I did her room. She was like, find your audience and then feed them.
Oh, feed them. But not after midnight because they turn into gremlins. That's too much alcohol for you, Karen.
Or feed them before the podcast. That way they're not hangry. Yes. But yeah, but I think it's like, it takes a while. Just like Caitlin said, right? It's, you know, once you find your audience, now you can just, you can do whatever you want because you found it, yeah. which is what every comedian wants.
And then people are like, oh, but now I'm worried I'm not going to be a good comic anymore because they're laughing at everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And I did a room full of people who are my total peers in Washington, D.C., and they laughed. I brought out all the old jokes mm-hmm. that I love. So talk about joke organization that I'd taken out of my sets because not everyone knows about the amendments to the Constitution and prohibition.
A lot of people really want to hear it. This is the thing. You're wrong, Amy. Everybody's just biting at the bit for more amendment jokes.
I mean, if you search Bill of Rights comedy, Amy Brown.
I bit deep into the nerd. Yeah. Bill O'Reilly. No.
Bill O'Reilly, Bill of Rights.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, Bill O'Reilly's a very... Amy's like, anyways, I'm going to do only right-leaning conservative rooms.
Right in the center of D.C.
I found my people.
Oh, my gosh. No. It was just nerd history jokes.
Of course.
And then I did some like rich white people jokes. I killed all the jokes that I had taken out of my set one by one at every brewery, at every little like dime store, coffee shop where people are like, what?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I did it there. And I don't know if it was because it was the people who are living in Washington, D.C. Yeah. So like most of them are lawyers that they were having a good time, or it's because they liked me. And I kept saying, like, you guys have to stop laughing at these jokes because you're just going to encourage me to put them back in my set. Sure. And they're not in there for a reason. Yeah. They're just for you crazy motherfuckers.
I know I keep doing this. I've been doing this the whole episode where I'll just drop a name. But Ishmael Lutfi.
Oh, Ishmael's great.
Hilarious.
I love Ishmael. He's
I remember
LA
when
now.
I started, he told me when he organizing a set, he was just like, dude, just like make sure you know your opener and your closer and then play with the middle. So when I do like 20-minute sets, I don't have a set list. I just
you can pivot.
Know the opener, know the closer, and I just pivot based on the list of stuff that I have and what they're reacting to. So I actually don't go into most like anything below 25 minutes.
Yeah.
I don't have a set list. I just know what I'm going to open with and what I'm going to close with.
That makes it more fun too, because otherwise we get bored. And
way
you can tell,
more fun.
Like we just kind of leave our bodies.
Yeah.
I think when you're first starting out, you have to know your set list and know your best jokes and go out and prove yourself. And then you can get loosey.
And then also like, it also leaves you room to like find new stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm always, I enjoy doing that, which is something I never did like first couple of years. I never wrote on stage, but I've been-
It's terrifying.
It's terrifying just to like say a premise and then see where it goes, where you're just talking and then figure it out. But yeah, now I'm like, oh, yeah, we're going to find something here.
It's funny what you're talking about, though, Amy, with like doing stuff for your friends, because there's a comic in town, Ryan Darling. He's from Chattanooga, where I'm also from. And we're also talking about like Nate Bargatze, and there's a comic, Louis Katz. So I ran open mics for years. My friend Ryan was like, oh, I want to start doing stand-up. So the first like 2 to 3 sets you do are a curse, because you're the funny friend for years. Everyone always tells you, you gotta do stand-up, you gotta do shows. So like you get a bunch of people like, I gotta come see you.
Yep.
And then after 2 to 3 shows, even just open mics, that stops.
And
so you get false confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And then you bomb because you're like, hey, that very specific joke to me didn't hit. So I remember Ryan started, Ryan's very funny. He's gotten very good. But Ryan started to like 1 or 2 shows. He's like, I really want to do this. Like, he was like, I love the shows you put on. Let me be like your go-to guy. I want to start. I was like, okay, cool. You're going to do 5 minutes. And then both Nate Bargatze and Louis Katz, this was like years ago.
Yeah.
We're like doing a co-headlining tour and they're at the show. I was like, you're going to do 5 minutes after my host set. He was like, oh, I'm not ready. I'm going to bomb. I was like, yes, you are. I was like, and I'm not in a rude way, but yes, you are going to bomb. But here's the thing. When you bomb in front of that stacked room, if you come to me the next day and say, no, I want to do this, fuck yeah, I will help you out. Yeah. We will work together. Because that's what a lot of, like, you do the first couple of sets, you're like, oh, my friends came, it was great. And then you do a couple without, and you're like, oh, this sucks. And then, because you get the bug. And he was
you get the bug.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, I mean, you ate shit last night in front of like 80 people, and then you saw everyone else kill. Do you still want to do this? He was like, yeah, 100%. I was like, great, man, let's start doing
let's
it.
And I think that's the key to stand-up is, at first, you bomb a lot, and then you stop bombing.
Oh, that's nice. I still have a bomb every once in a while.
And you're like, and let me look at the calendar.
Sometimes,
when do I step?
But like, you stop bombing in, I would say, on a regular, consistent basis, right?
Every once in a while.
Oh, God damn it. Oh, my God. Comedy is such a humble bitch. Like, it will humble you real quick. Mm-hmm. even yeah. at your highest moment, be like, you know something? You're not as hot as yeah. you thought you were.
And it's yeah. That's why it's very subjective, too. Like, if you yeah. depending on what kind of performer you are and what performer you're following, there's some styles of comedy just cannot follow others. Like,
oh,
a
yeah.
big personality with a lot of crowd work. Oh, good luck getting the audience. So, like, let's settle into this one woman show afterwards. Mm-mm, no. Yeah. And it's, well, yeah, you were there. a specific night is being referenced right now. And I knew it was going to go like that. And I should have said something.
Well, yeah.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah. When I knew it was going to go like that. And I was like, well, let me try it. Let me see what happens. Sure. I'm like, yep, that's what I thought was going to happen.
I love how much comedy we're talking about. And I'm not straying from it. Let me ask, so how long have you been doing stand-up, you said?
8 years.
Eight years, yeah. When did you know that you wanted to start doing it?
You know, what's weird is I saw a whole bunch of people who I watched do it early when I first just started writing. Mm-hmm. So Clayton English, Rob Hayes, Brian, what's his name?
Talking about Brian Eamon from?
Brian Eamon.
Yeah.
Jeff.
Foxworthy?
No.
We're talking about
Greenspan?
He's in Florida now.
This is old Atlanta people that are
Justice?
Now.
Mike Rowland, I saw.
Have you seen the show Animal Control? He's great on it.
Oh, yes, yeah, he's so good. I texted him, but
I saw all these people do it.
Yeah.
And then I started kind of stalking them a little bit at these shows where I just wanted to watch the comedy and I wanted to watch them work. Even David Perdue. I just wanted to watch them,
David Perdue. Jeez.
Right?
David Perdue was working with Mia Jackson when she was working on a joke. She came and did my show, and then he was sitting in the audience, and she finally got the punchline figured out. And she's like, yeah, David, that was it. During her set, yeah. She's like, that's
also,
the
Amy,
punchline.
You need to get David Perdue on here.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Yes.
Do you know him well? I was going to say, I can hit him up for you, too. I love David Perdue.
Yeah, I booked him a lot, and I've bent his ear a lot.
He's one of my favorite comics, and also that if you can get advice from him on anything, it's sage.
So David Perdue and Damon Sumner both started out in preacher school.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what it's called.
I did not know that, and that makes so much seminary schools. We're talking
seminary
about.
School.
But that makes so much sense for both of them because they are controlling that room like it's Sunday.
Yes,
and they're both kind and they're helping the younger generation.
Yeah.
They're very patient.
And so that's how I started.
Yeah.
I basically saw a whole bunch of people do it. Clayton English and Rob Hayes were, I'd say, the two that really inspired me. I remember hearing a joke from Clayton English, and I thought it was the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life. I wrote 3 pages worth of jokes after I heard him.
The inspiration.
Yeah, that
real.
Was the inspiration.
Yeah.
And then I didn't perform that till 6 months later.
Mm-hmm.
And then I took a class. I actually took a class from Joel and then started performing. And then from there, I was like, oh.
Yeah, Clayton English is great.
Let's do this.
This is what I'm worried about, too, because the highs are so high in comedy. Laugh at your jokes
is
the most amount of adrenaline you'll ever have.
Yes.
And then the fear sometimes before a set, we're like, I don't know this room. Am I going to do well? Am I going to let down the guy who booked or woman
For
who booked
sure.
me?
Yeah.
This is making my parents are in the audience. All of these kind
haven't
of
I haven't
stress.
Had that one yet.
And then I wonder if it makes us all bipolar.
Yeah.
It's just that a lot of neurodivergent people tend to want to do creative stuff. And so there's just a lot of spicy brain people. Dude. And
For
then
sure.
and then you're like, oh, dopamine.
Dopamine.
Yes.
Dude, the first night you did comedy, when did you fall asleep? Was it 5 a.m.? Because that's where I was just in bed. This was the best thing that's ever happened.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the first night was definitely a super high.
Yeah.
And it was like.
You took some edibles
mic.
And you were able to fall asleep
I
later?
Mean, I don't know if I took edibles that night. Other nights I've taken edibles, but on that night I didn't take any edibles. I was just calm,
mm-hmm.
but inside was just sparks, Ooh. Just things were going.
Yeah.
And then a week later, I got super humbled at a show that Ben Palmer did at the Hole in the Wall, which is one of just the most humbling shows that you can do. I literally did that show and I had a 5-minute set that I just killed with for the previous week. And then I went through that set in 3 minutes. Went inside
my armpits are sweating
went
for
inside
you right
my
now.
Car, balled up in a fetal position.
Did you, can you
stayed
cry?
In the car for an hour and cried my eyes out.
God, I'm glad you can cry.
No. I did cry.
Good. I'm glad you can cry.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Otherwise,
oh,
you're going to punch a window.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Cried my eyes out and then went home, like drove back home. And then literally I woke up. I was like, let's do that again. And that's how I knew. I was like, yeah, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like, once you, your first really big bomb,
yeah.
If you just have everyone stare at you and you're like, oh, they hated me. And then the next day you're like, all right, yeah, I'll do this more. Like, that's when you know you're like, oh, no, I'm stuck.
Yeah, yeah. And then you do more shows. The good parts are so good.
Just to be, like, there's, I feel like it's a, I'm going to be gross now, a kind of intimacy.
Oh, now?
I like Joel. I like
your grossness is talking about intimacy and real feelings.
Yes. Yeah. We don't do that. I'm from strong people. In the north, it was cold and you don't have feelings because they'll freeze off.
If you have real feelings, you go ride your pony.
You go ride your pony.
You cry in the barn. Yeah. Dude, there's a thing where you cry in the barn, or if you've not done well at the horse show, you go cry in the trailer.
So happy that I make these jokes not knowing anything about your past, and then I'm right.
Yes, you're right.
Where'd you grow up, Amy?
I grew up up in near Canada in New York.
And it sounds
like a horse farm?
Like, on a farm, it sounds, on a dirt road.
She, dirt road. Okay.
Sounds like it was very fancy, but she always points out that actually just it's not, and a lot of people just, you don't really own a horse or pony. They just decide to show up, and you take care of them.
Oh, really?
And then, if you do a bad job, they rub you off.
No, that sounded sexual. No,
but isn't that what you always?
So ponies are nasty. They live 1,000 years.
Okay,
and if you try to ride a pony away from the barn. Uh-huh. And you're a child. They weigh way more than you, and they'll be like, if you're like you're a tree, and I'm the kid.
Yeah.
The pony goes, wipe the kid off on the tree and then gallop back to the barn.
But she always calls it rub. She's like, yeah, the pony rubs you off. And then I'm just like, Amy.
Yeah, it sounds a little sexual now. I hear it out loud.
Very sexual.
That's awesome. So I actually wonder, do you talk about that in your comedy? Like sort of the growing up, like the childhood stuff?
I talk about I married my husband because I'm trying to breed the Mountain Dew out of my bloodlines.
That's so good.
Thank you.
That's really
and
awesome.
My son helped me write that joke. I'm like, what's white trash? And he said, Mountain Dew. I'm like, that's it.
Yeah, yeah. I've got a Mountain Dew bit too. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So
that's awesome.
I do talk about that. Like my number one thing that had like the top of my writing pages right now is relatable. Like just make it.
For sure.
Everyone enjoys this. They don't have to know that prohibition was one of the amendments and then women getting the vote was the next one and then prohibition was repealed.
That's what you gotta do.
They don't need cliff notes.
It's not that you have to do all relatable, it's that you have to find how to make your relatable material connect to these other things. Because that's what, especially like callbacks and shit, like if you're like, all right, here's some relatable stories, here's me talking about prohibition, and then if you don't have everybody, and then you find a way to connect that prohibition joke to the like my real life stories, that's when people are like, oh shit. Because
People always want to feel smart. Yeah.
My biggest callback right now is boobies.
My biggest callback is poop. Yeah, absolutely.
Everyone has poop.
Boobies and poop.
Look at us.
That should be your comedy special.
Boobies and poop.
I was going to do it, plugs and butterflies, but
that's cute too. I never did a comedy special, but mine was going to be called This One Time because I was a storyteller comic, and it's just me telling about how bad I was at living, and I did a lot of dumb things. So like I was always like, I'm the punchline, and one of my friends was like, yeah, all of your stories, you're just like, all right, and this one time, and they're like, Joel, you said that so calmly, and it was fucked up. No one has done that.
Yeah.
And then so I was like, well, that would be the name of my special, is This One Time.
This One Time, yeah. Cute. Mine's going to be called Poopademic.
That's cute.
That's a fun one.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
I feel like
stage.
I'm still recovering. So
from the children.
Oh
the
my
raising
God.
Of
it
the children.
So much.
Dude.
It was so much.
And your kids are still
how
little.
How many kids you have?
I have 3 kids. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was a lot. It was like
I'm the youngest of 3 boys. 3 kids is too many.
Oh, well, we stopped at 2, so maybe our was too good. It's too good, we stopped at 2.
I mean, I don't know. My parents weren't good at anything. And so we just kind of ran wild, but I definitely like.
Yeah, can you imagine if your father was Yoshi with comedy, but about parenting? Like the child poops.
No,
because
I like Yoshi, so I can't imagine him being my father. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I think I just when I think about sort of just where comedy is going, it's feeling much more personal, right? Like I think
because then people can't steal your jokes.
Yeah, because then you can't. You're only coming from a place that you know. And so, yeah, I kind of do the same thing where I remember make it personal. Make it something that you've actually feel to some degree whenever I write jokes. So nothing that I will ever tell on stage, very few things are just like about something that I haven't like experienced or have some kind of feeling about. I don't write about things that I don't have a thing.
Oh my gosh, I have a new joke. I'm so embarrassed about it and I love it. It's not dirty or anything. It's just true. Mm-hmm. And every time I say it, I feel like tears coming into my eyes and my like a reaction on stage is 100% authentic. Yes. I still feel that every time. I'm getting goose pimples right now. And I'm like, I just love telling that joke so much.
Yeah.
It's funny and it's true and it's relatable and it's a callback. And I'm like, that's like the triple crown, but with four fingers. I don't know what quadruple crown. I love it so much. And then it's also like the arc of a story and as like a musical theater. And I love doing like, oh, we're just having fun. Oh, it gets dark. Oh, no, it's happy again. Oh, she's getting dirty.
Yeah, ebbs and flows are huge for it.
And I think it's also important, like probably the other thing I'm kind of nerdy about is like people going to therapy. Because I feel like therapy was one of those things that kind of saved me from a life perspective of just like realizing that I didn't have to figure things out on my own. So I always try to infuse some, I don't want to say like a lesson, but like some level I want people to leave after they watch me with like love. Like just leave like in a good happy space, even if it's a poop joke. I just want you to like smile afterwards after it's like over with, that like, oh my God, thank you that.
For me, when the couple goes home, if there's a couple, when they're brushing their teeth, they remember a joke because they see something and like a bra on the back of a doorknob, which is one of my jokes. Yeah. Like, there's something, and they like laugh, I'm like, heh, heh. I love that.
Don't listen to Yoshi men out there. Lean into toxic masculinity. Die at 35. Have a heart attack, not because you're dying,
new
because
podcast.
You can never be happy.
New podcast.
No, that's very true.
Rage until you die.
Didn't we talk about putting a podcast together called White Men?
Oh, did we?
Yes. We were just going to have a podcast.
Me as a white man, I'm able to produce
that.
The
person who's not here, we just talk about. We just talk about the patriarchy.
Patriarchy. I don't know. My patriarchy's paying my bills right now.
I will say there's so many comics.
We call him Papa.
There's so many comics like, I don't want to go to therapy because I won't be funny anymore. It's no, you just don't want to do the work.
Oh.
You'll actually be so much funnier because when I was still doing stand-up, because I've been doing therapy for about like 4 or 5 years now and I was still doing stand-up, I would come up with bits during it and my therapist knew me really well. I'm like, okay. I need to write this down because you just gave me a breakthrough for a punchline.
Absolutely.
But also, go to therapy.
Oh, I've done that too.
Yeah,
I think we should have universal health care and a lot of other things, but I also I think everybody should just get a stipend to do therapy every week.
I definitely think it should be free.
It's a problem. Brains are a problem.
And oh,
people
your
need
brains,
the tools to work
most,
them.
Most people's
also,
brains.
Also, I know you're about to do the questions, but if you think that if therapy is always like, they're just going to tell you problems, no. All a therapist does active listening and ask you certain questions and you figure out your shit on your own. And then you have to figure that out. So that's, don't, just go to therapy. If you've ever thought about it, go to therapy.
You guys should see the sassy hands
and don't
that
use better
Joel
help.
Is doing.
Joel is sassifying.
I just love therapy.
How much champagne did you drink tonight?
No, I'm just very,
he's like a character.
I'm very,
I'm there with you.
Like I was, I just was, had a lot of things like bottled away. I've been doing it for years. And it's just one of the things of being like, I am just so much happier every single day. And also better at every single thing I do. Like day-to-day task, being funny, being a better partner. Like therapy is good. It's a lot of work.
Good.
And some days you'll go to therapy and then you'll be like, I can't do anything for the rest of the day except for cry and eat donuts. And you're like, hey.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah, I do
You're
that.
Processing something.
Yeah,
anyways,
it's processing.
It's a good bird's eye view, and it's a tool. They give you a toolbox to handle what's
your
to
stuff.
Understand your partner, understand people's how they're reacting in the world.
Yeah.
And then also to release all the trauma, whatever. Because growing up is literally just one trauma after another because you just embarrass yourself or mess up your entire life until you figure out stuff and or run out of fucks to give. So
because I love
this episode's explicit. Put that on the thing.
I love
your
joke about therapy and your husband, I think, is absolutely hilarious.
Oh, the marriage counselor.
I think it's so funny because I think people like truly relate to it. Like you're like in couples therapy and all of a sudden you're like, oh, that one's on me. That one's on me.
Right? A lot of it too, like sorry, I'm not going to go into my set, but a lot of my sets comes from what the therapist taught me. And I'm like, y'all know this, blah, blah, blah.
Processing your emotions.
Okay. Real quick, I'm going to tell you how I organize my jokes in case people are, I think this is going to be an all jokes thing.
Yeah,
I can't
absolutely.
Believe
let's do it.
It's been 50, great.
53 minutes already. Oh, I feel like I've been here for 5 minutes.
Oh my God,
talk,
yes.
You and I could talk about this for hours.
We kind of do.
We nerd out together. I don't even, should I even ask the questions? Because none of these are kind of,
okay.
I feel like I should write comedy specific ones.
No, just
no,
so
they
ask
don't
them.
Have to be, yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
But for me, I do my jokes.
I get it.
You have a PhD?
No, I have ADHD.
Oh,
different
okay.
than a PhD.
Okay. You got dyslexia and ADHD?
Yeah.
Pew, pew, pew.
My guy.
She's so giggly, I love it. When, okay, real quick, when we're at the World Series of Comedy in Las Vegas, you go for the whole week. I went for the whole week last year. And you and I, when we were not on the show, we sat in the front row, especially if they're like, well, if we sat in the back mostly, but if there was not enough people at a show, we would sit in the front row and we would laugh so hard.
Yeah, and so hard. That was us like enjoying
the comedy.
Like we weren't going as comedians, we were just going as like fans, just being like, let's watch funny. And they were hilarious.
Hilarious. And then you're so tall and kind. Yeah. You sit in the front row like this.
Yeah,
like
I duck down so people.
Real down and low. Yeah, and then you get to my size. And then we're in the giggle zone.
It is the best. Yes. We have a good time when we are together.
This is why, like, just staying home and watching TV at night is not the same thing as going out and seeing live comedy.
Oh my God,
like, a belly giggle with a group of people, there's nothing better.
Belly giggle.
A belly giggle.
That's a good comedy special.
Oh, that is.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, Pete Lee keeps having these really adorable names for all of his tours. I'm like, God damn it. That's perfect. Like, Snuggle Storm, Giggle Fest. I'm like, these are all my favorite words. Stop. But
that's
he's
funny.
A clean comic. And I'm not. So, first I want to tell you how I organize my jokes.
Yeah.
Because doing it chronologically would kill me. So you have to be like, in 1995, I thought about butt jokes.
No. Not chronologically as in when I thought about them.
Just when you
chronologically
write them.
When I write them down. So
you
I
said
will...
chronologically twice and I'm
Did
still
I?
Lost.
Oh my God. So basically, if I write a joke today, I will put today's date and then write the joke. Like the idea. And then when I go back... So when I'm doing my open mics, I go back and I look at the jokes that I have for the week. And I say, I'm going to try and work on these jokes this week to try to get to something final that I can either put in a special or add to another bit. It's just more that I know that if it's been too long since I haven't thought of anything, then I will force myself to try to write something for that day. I'll go find a word and I'll just write a joke out of just thin air. Just to try to
get the
in
muscle
the rhythm
going
of actually
this,
doing jokes.
For me, feels like you are doing like the Apple Watch method of comedy, where it's like, get up right now, go stand up.
To
You've
some
been
degree,
sitting too long.
Yeah, to some degree,
run a mile.
To some degree, I will. I know when I haven't been on stage in a while,
or
when comedy hasn't actually fulfilled me, and at that moment, I'm like, here's the thing. My wife would be like, hey, I'm going to need you to get out because you haven't been funny this week. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I know because she knows that I need that, right? The same way people need therapy or the same way people like need an escape.
A workout.
I need comedy
need that outlet.
To be like that thing.
My husband
so
can tell
I'm
too
not
for me.
An a-hole at the house.
Yeah.
Also, I think a good rule of thumb too. Obviously, like when you first start, you can run the same set. You're just trying to get comfortable on stage.
For sure.
But when you're doing it long enough, I used to have this rule at open mics. If we, the open mic that I started, after a while, we got a good crowd. But for a while, there's no audience.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be like, great, let's just not do the show and let's just go chill on the back porch and like drink and hang out. And people are like, well, I want to do the show. And I would look at everyone and be like, do any of you actually have a new joke? Or a new tag, and I swear to God, if you lie to me and I hear it, because I know all of your sets, because we're together every week, I will just berate you. I was like, because every time I'm like, or we can go out back and fucking chill together and be funny in a group, and I guarantee one of us is going to get a joke. But if you're just doing the same
For
set,
sure.
and every time, like not every time, but like half the time, people are like, all right, yeah, let's just go up there. Like, so that's what they get. It's not like an Apple Watch. You got to find like the regiment.
Yeah. I mean,
and
I'm not
you.
And I'm not regimented. So I don't write every day. I write when I'm inspired, but I'm inspired a lot. So yeah. I just find moments by which I'm inspired, or like if I see something,
is this something?
I'll write
something?
It down.
Is this something?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that something?
Or just like, and also like my mind works in a very comedic way. So like when I walked in your house, like, and the black dog came, I was like, all right, a black dog that didn't like bark at me. That means
in Buckhead too.
That means this black dog. I'm not even this black dog. That means this dog has been around black people, which made me even more excited.
Ooh.
So like that's like
I keep them in the other room.
What was that?
Nothing.
Hilarious.
He made me. I had to make a joke. He set it up. I had to make a joke about it. I had to do the rich bitch white lady joke.
No, we keep her in the other room because he's a lovely, but. And I say this with love of all dogs, just a big old dumb idiot. They'll just like, hey, can I bump into everything?
Yeah,
bless his heart. He's autistic. The dog is.
Perfect dog.
He's a single-minded. But he's,
But just like, that was the inspiration when I came in. I was like, oh, that was kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Like, because usually when I go in anybody's house, the a dog comes up, the dog automatically barks.
If you're wearing a hat too, that's scary.
Oh, really?
Yeah, a lot of dogs don't like cats.
I had no idea. Oh, my God. I'm not around a lot of people.
There's a really good I think you should leave sketch about that.
My dog doesn't like the orange vests that like people wear when in the street.
Yeah, like a construction vest?
I think, I don't know why.
That's so fascinating. I had no idea. I mean, can they see it? Aren't they colorblind?
If you see shades of gray or something. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
That's interesting. So what does orange look like to a dog?
Bright gray.
Bright gray. Maybe
also,
like
you know, it's not a common color you see around a house.
That's true.
Yeah.
As an interior designer, how much of your house is like reflective orange?
Not a lot.
Only the hazard signs in the bedroom.
Yeah.
Because
we put a cone outside of the bedroom to let the kids know.
No rubbernecking.
Yeah. I don't care about your nightmare. Mommy and daddy are busy.
There's a landing strip on the floor and a landing strip somewhere else.
We have the police. We have the police don't cross tape that we put across the door at night. So our teenage son doesn't knock on the door anymore.
Is that why you ask people if they have ever used a ham radio? Because that's part of your husband's foreplay where he's just kind of like, we're coming in. You're like, and you're just having to do like, they're like, no, we got some precipitation.
Breaker.
No, ham radio is Morse code. It's not.
Who knows? Who knows anything? Comics don't have to know things to riff. I do.
You're giving away the clues for the question.
My other podcast I do with a comic named Paul Byron, who knows too much for his own good. And
he's too smart.
The other day we were recording together, and he said something. He was just like, "I just need you to know basic facts." I was like, "Paul, I can know basic facts, or I can riff bullshit out of nowhere. I can't do both. Which one do you want from me right now?"
I have the same conversation with my husband every morning.
Yes.
When he's reading, absolutely. He reads the paper.
Oh, yeah, let's do these. Let's rapid fire these.
First of all, I just want to say, like, for anyone out there who might tune into this, because Yoshi, you do a bunch with comedians, helping comedians write, blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
I do my jokes based on topic.
Okay.
And I just have it bold if it's working, and small and not bold if it's not. But I keep all of those ideas just like ting, ting, ting at the bottom. It just is like, it moves up to the top because as I get to become a better comic.
Yeah.
And or callbacks from earlier things, some of those old jokes might actually make sense again.
And then you capitalize them.
And then they get bolded.
Nice. And they get bolded. Yeah, yeah.
Very new. They get colored in green because like spring green, new growth.
I love that. I love the fact that it feels like you're taking like your interior design world into your comedy world. You're like, okay, this would go well with this color and this would go well with this joke. That's cool.
It's
that's
thematic.
Cool. I think everyone has to have some kind of rhythm. Like, I feel like I've been dropping names all this entire thing. Eric Dowis, who's absolutely hilarious, very, very funny. He has a method where he literally writes everything into an Excel sheet and he practices before any set. I think he says 25 times, practices it against the wall before he goes up any single time. And he knows every single word that's going to come out of his mouth, word for word for the entire thing, no matter what happens.
Even if it's like a...
And he knows how long each one is to the second and all the timing between the jokes and where the laugh should be, all that stuff, right? And I don't do that, but there's been periods in my comedy career where I will get super anal and actually do something very like detailed like that. And it's actually been amazing to try something completely different that my brain just doesn't do. My brain is not that organized. I've got ADHD. I'm a creative. Like, I think in a lot of different kind of ways, but I can also be hyper focused on like certain tasks when I really
when
want to.
When you're passionate about
it. And when I'm passionate about it. Mm-hmm. So like when it comes to comedy, when it comes to like putting a set together, so like when I headline a set, I get super detailed about the entire thing.
Yeah.
And I will write down how many laughs. I will write down certain tags that I may or may not. Like, I will write down absolutely everything and get nerdy about
it. Can you run your set when you're driving the car?
I can't. Mostly because there's always freaking kids in the car.
Oh, golly, no. I always have to drive an hour somehow to get to the show.
I won't run my set when I'm driving to a show. What I will do is only practice the tags that I'm doing, but I won't run my
the whole thing.
For me, it feels too, I don't feel loose when I know everything that I'm going to say. I don't, and for me, feeling loose on stage is actually
reads as authentic.
Yeah, it's way better.
Yeah. For me.
Just a little advice for as the only person in this room of three people doesn't have kids. Just don't have kids if you want to. It's a lot better.
Do you know how many times I want to put them back in my wife's vagina? Like, I
want to
just push them back.
I don't think that's okay if you want. Just tell them to go
like,
off.
Dude, if they could like incubate back under 450 for a little bit longer, then I'll take them. I'll take them later.
You're gonna need a bigger oven. Oh my God. You're gonna have to talk to Hitler.
I think you also have to talk to your wife first about this. You're like, hey, honey. She's like, no. She's like, I did nine months three times.
Dude, I was so excited when I gave birth because I'm like, finally, my husband has to hold the baby. Like, I've been holding it for 9 months.
And then he wakes up one morning at 2 a.m. He's like, it's your turn. You're like, it's my turn.
Oh, no. No, my husband's a rock star.
Oh, good.
Yes. Yeah, that's awesome. He's so good.
Let's rapid fire these questions.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Are you ready? We're going to find out how nerdy you are. Okay. We know on the scale of 1 to 1,000 nerd points in comedy, you win 1,000 points. Which is why we're friends. But okay, we're gonna find out on the other, like, just like the regular world of nerd stuff. Because I have a feeling you might be cool.
Oh no!
All right.
I keep trying to tell us nerds can be like cool and hot too. It's a new era.
No, I'm talking about his energy. I can just tell. You were in marketing or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was in marketing. He's got swagger.
Marketing.
He makes
executive.
Friends everywhere he goes. Yeah, blah blah blah. He's good at small talk. Okay. Have you ever been to Dragon Con?
Yeah.
Sober.
I'm sober anyway. So
no,
yes.
Not like that sober.
Oh, am I sober?
Without drugs.
Just like in life?
No. Have you ever been to Dragon Con not on an edible or anything like that?
Yes. I've been to Dragon Con not on an edible.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds
Okay.
That sounds pretty nerdy.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever ridden a unicycle?
No.
Okay. Did you ever have a woodwind instrument?
A woodwind instrument. Oh my God. This have one? No.
Play one?
No.
Death Star Lego.
Yeah, no.
Soldering iron.
Soldering iron?
Yeah.
Like
because you can make circuit breakers better.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I just thought about it when I was younger. Yes, I sure did have a soldering
iron. A cape.
Weirdly enough, a cape came when I got married.
You got married in a cape?
Oh, no. Not when I didn't get married in a cape, but like I got a cape after marriage.
Okay.
So like have one.
Even if we can't get through the rest of these questions, I got to ask you about your wedding because you have a really interesting marriage. Because, so you're Muslim, right?
Yes.
And you're in Texas and you met your wife on a dance floor in Texas.
Yes.
And she's Muslim too.
Uh-huh.
But you guys are from different kinds of cultures.
Yes.
Paint a picture. Tell the story.
So our wedding was actually like every Nigerian wedding, I'm Nigerian, every Nigerian wedding is usually like a very long night of dancing. So usually starts like at 12 p.m. and then goes to like 6 a.m. the next morning. Most Nigerian weddings. Most Nigerian weddings are just one day affairs, but they're just long and they take forever. So my wife did not want to do that part of it. So our wedding was mostly just, we took a part of Nigeria and then we did a bit of her culture because she's Palestinian. And so the piece that we did was basically, the Nigerian wedding pretty much lasted till about 2 a.m. and then everybody went home.
Oh, that's...
Yeah. And then, but we had Palestinian food at the wedding.
Okay.
We had a DJ that played Palestinian music.
Okay.
And so we kind of combined cultures. And then we also switched clothes during the wedding.
This is
the,
so fun.
The one thing that she... So I kind of planned my own wedding.
Because you're a modern man.
Kind of. So, like, I just... didn't want her to stress out.
How many LPMs were in the ceremony?
Oh my God, a lot, a lot. Oh,
I've shot a bunch of Nigerian weddings. They're cracking jokes, they're laughing, they're dancing.
They're having a good time.
It's great.
They're having a good time, yeah. Nice. So the one thing that she wanted that I could not do was have like not a lot of people. So there was probably about 350 people at my wedding.
Right.
Yeah.
But was it because I feel like Palestinian weddings probably have a lot of people. She might have just not wanted a lot of people.
Yeah. It was just her. It wasn't like a Palestinian.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was just mostly her.
From that area.
She just does not. She's just not like. Not big into like attention around herself. She's an introvert.
You're the extrovert.
She's a physician. She is a like very
linear,
logical, linear.
Get it done. You're the spaz. You're bringing the fun. You're bringing the chaos.
Absolutely.
You're the fun parent. Yes. She's like bedtime.
Yeah. But I mean, I would say like we've probably switched a little bit of roles a little bit now that we've been together for so long.
Yeah.
And we probably do a little bit of the same thing.
That's good because you're robbing off on each other. I go to bed at 9:30 now.
Absolutely.
This is 1,000% my husband.
I literally told her that she is much funnier because of me. I think she hates it when I do that.
It's charming.
Like, babe,
it's
you're
really
so much
charming.
Funnier
no,
now that you've met me.
Yeah.
And I remind her every day.
But this is so good, like bringing a marriage together of opposites, and you cover a lot of bases, right?
Oh my God,
it's kind
yes.
of like a balancing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really appreciate that kind of energy. It's rough for the first couple of years of your marriage because you're like, why does your brain work like that?
Yes.
Ah! And then you learn to appreciate it when you spiral out and you're a nice solid person.
I mean,
person.
I think she's like figured out like how my brain works. It took me a while to figure it out.
And, well, she's
like,
a doctor.
She's like, what is this? I was like,
this is
called hyperactivity.
I'm in a manic state. Tomorrow, it will be very different.
I will be depressed tomorrow, and I spent all of our money on a project I'm not going to finish.
You've seen my basement. So I am fortunate in the sense that like I set up things like way in advance to be like, hey, babe, you know, when we get married, you know what I would really love as your husband? A man cave. So I've gotten a man cave everywhere I've been that's been my own. And it's so disorganized, but it is the shiznits. It is awesome.
Well, then let's call this the man cave because mine's a mess too.
No, yours is just the costume closet. No,
my husband's office. Yeah. He can tell if I've moved the mouse on his
this
computer.
This is what's funny to me is that you think that this is a mess.
Yeah, you said that, and I was just like, "What is disorganized?"
I tidied it up because you were coming. I put the piles in behind those doors.
Pick two more questions, and then we can wrap up. We're having too much fun.
I
have to put on my producer hat.
Yes, please.
Yeah, we got no.
Yeah, we're 13 minutes over an hour. We've never
no
done under an hour on this podcast.
No one can listen. No one can listen.
It's
this
because
long.
We're all ADHD, and we're like, wait, just one more thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, I had a joke, but I forgot it.
Exactly. My point. Exactly.
Okay.
Be 2 a.m. She'll be texting like, "This was."
Do you have a tattoo?
No.
Are Nigerians not allowed to have tattoos?
I think they are. I just don't.
Okay.
Yeah. No tattoo.
Have you ever had a birthday party for a pet?
No.
Because you were just excited about a dog that was nice to you for the first time.
I don't have. I'm not a pet person.
Yeah. No, you don't have to be.
Yeah. Like I've just never had pets, so I never had an opportunity to give a. That'd be weird if I was like, "Hey, random pet, I'm gonna give you a birthday party.
Well, get your Type 5 ready because Carter's birthday. We're booking you."
I think if you want to put your children back
any
into
dog people here, any dog?
if you want to put your children back into your wife, you don't need a pet. because you're not going to love them more than you love your children.
I beg to differ.
Touché.
But
I know. I agree with you, yeah. But it's
but
close.
We'll not let your kids see this one clip.
Yeah. I know. It's. I agree. But it is, yes. Yeah, it's close. Do you ever watch Jeopardy on Netflix?
Jeopardy on Netflix?
Yeah. Or in real life, I guess.
Yeah, I watch IRL. Jeopardy. I love Jeopardy. Mm-hmm. I actually went and filled out all the forms to try to get on Jeopardy.
Oh, that's what I was waiting for.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I've literally tried to get on Jeopardy there. Many of times before. They give you a pamphlet of the types of questions.
What's it like?
I'm one of those people. So when I went to college, I was a pre-med major my first couple of years. And I realized I don't even like blood.
It's yucky.
Which was not a good
idea. Do
you
know what turns into a solid right away? And then you throw right up. It's a nightmare.
Usually I pass out. So I realized that was not a good idea for a major. And then when I found marketing, I was like, oh, this works with my brain. So I say all that to say, like, when I just love knowledge, like I'm a knowledge mm-hmm. hoarder, like I like to know things. So even though I didn't graduate with like a pre-med degree, I actually graduated with a combined sciences minor, mm-hmm. which is what happens when you take all the science classes, but then you don't graduate with.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was just like, yeah, I took physics, I took astrology, astrology. I took
astronomy.
Astronomy, yeah.
Astrology, I think, is like, God. I'm a Capricorn.
Yeah.
Full circle.
Astrology is Mercury in retrograde. That's not.
That's
I
your
just
wife
know metro-
ready for horny times on a Tuesday at 7:30.
I need to figure
mark
out
your calendars.
When Mercury's in retrograde.
Dude, you got to find out when she ovulates.
For I got to sure.
be. Yeah.
Yeah. That's all on right. the mission.
What, one last question. We're 60 minutes over.
Oh, yes.
Jesus, Christmas.
Find a good question.
Yeah, that was pretty nerdy, the applying to Jeopardy. I don't think we're going to get better.
Well, Yoshi, give
us
some plugs. Where can everyone find you? Tell us about your podcast. Tell us about your shows.
Yeah. You can find me. I have a podcast with my wife called F the Joneses. My wife, that although sounds, she's a physician, she's also a life
into,
coach.
It sounds like gangbangs. I can't be the first person to make that joke.
That's you are.
No, really?
Most people here.
Other people respect Yoshi and his wife.
Most people hear F the Joneses and are like, she's oh my God, that's really
swinger?
Cool. Just to say F the Joneses.
Swinger lifestyle.
But yes. It's a podcast about really like just what we did a couple years ago, which was we basically decided to like sort of downgrade our house, move to the suburbs. We sold our car. Like, we just did things to make sure that we were living for us.
Yeah.
And so literally it was like, we were like,
preach.
F the Joneses.
Yeah.
And we started the podcast like kind of during the pandemic, just being like, let's live for us. So we did that. I've got that podcast. And then I'm also do the Hot Breath podcast with Joel Byers, which is a comedy podcast. We do that every single week.
On YouTube, and it's live, and you can log on and you can ask questions.
Yes, it is the Hot Breath Comedy Network.
If you make a little like reminder when you're YouTubing, it'll pop up, and you're like, you know what? I'm on the toilet, but I also want to see what Yoshi and Joel
absolutely.
Are doing.
What a great plug! A podcast you can watch and listen to on the toilet.
You know what? The absolutely. Toilet is not just for Facebook and Instagram. We're branching out. It's for YouTube, and this podcast is on YouTube. All of my friends who aren't watching it on YouTube.
Yes. Yeah. And then you can catch all the stuff that I'm doing on yoshi.com, YOSHEE.com, and follow me on Instagram at DJ Yoshi, also DJ too. This is, if you realize like my brain, you'll realize that I get into way too much stuff. But I'm kind of good at all the things that I get into. So like, I'm good at DJing. I DJ weddings. I've DJed a couple of comedian weddings. I just like doing lots of different stuff because my brain works in that way and it gets fulfilled. Really, the best way my brain gets fulfilled is by making people happy. And music, jokes, and like seeing people smile makes people happy.
You know what? If you have to have sex with your neighbors to be happy, I'm sure you're making them happy.
Oh my God, where's the pineapple when you need it?
Ayo. pineapple, right? That means you're a swinger.
Upside down, upside down.
Upside down,
but
yes.
No, in old-fashioned times, a pineapple was expensive and people had to rent them. In the 1700s, they'd rent in England in the those periods.
Relatable material. Relatable. Anyways, thank you so much, Yoshi, for coming on.
I'm nerding out too. Thank you for coming, Yoshi. I love you. We're going to have you back because I feel like I could still talk to you a million hours about comedy.
Thank you,
we should just do this. This is 1000% comedy, 100 million, I don't know, percentages. I
a
think
lot
there's
of percentages,
a lot.
Yes.
Just stops at 100.
Just stops at
100. Now you sound
nerd.
Yeah.